Welcome to another episode of Never Thought I'd Say This. I am your host, Celia Behar, and...
As you were looking at me, I knew you were going to say something stupid. It's like, what?
I've learned now that I just have to lean into the stupid and lean into the fact that I'm going to look at you and laugh, and it feels incredibly awkward sitting here and introducing a show with no one. So it just, that I'm just leaning into that, all you right. know what I mean? And I'm like, all right, cool.
All right.
Be awkward with it.
So. You can be me. We've talked about it before. You might, you know, if you want to be me and live in my life right now, which you don't, I don't know who would want.
Look, I mean, mine isn't all fucking roses lately either. So, you know, whatever.
One time when I worked in upstate New York, one of a client yelled at a coworker of mine, you know, my life isn't all guns and roses, and then stormed out.
Thank God it's not all guns and roses. I mean, yeah, you got to
a little. One of my favorite stories from my friend Amy Brown. My life's not all guns and roses. And walked out. Yeah. Anyway, we have a guest today. Oh, and I'm actually Celia Behar. You're actually Jody Sweetin, just so that no one's confused.
Supposedly.
Allegedly you are. And we have a amazing guest. I'm so excited that she came on. This is Lauren Whitney. We actually talked about you, Lauren, when Isaiah was on. Because we are both obsessed with the video that you made, and yes. We talked about it on the show, but you can introduce yourself and tell us a little about you and your parenting stats, as we call them. We have girls. Everybody knows about them.
Yes. I have 2 girls, Zoe and Beatrix, and oh boy. I turned it to Do Not Disturb.
Well, she did. She thinks she did. She didn't.
I did. Calls and notifications will be silenced until Do Not Disturb is turned off. I don't know.
Well, it ain't me.
Again, electronics. All of the electronics are just.
I'm telling you. Anyway, yes. She's got 2 girls. I've got an almost 14-year-old and an almost 9-year-old as well. And tell us about you.
Yeah. So, I'm Lauren, and I have 1 baby. Well, he's not a baby anymore, but I don't know when your child stops being like a baby, or when you get to stop saying that I have a newborn.
I say it.
My mom's like, you will always be my baby. You're a 30-year-old woman who has 2 babies of her own, but you will always be my baby.
Right. My son's 3 and a half, and I'm like, oh, I have a newborn, you know, life is I'm adjusting to life.
Right. Yeah. Just adjusting to this whole parent thing. Look, it's I know, but it's a big adjustment.
But real talk, it really does feel that way. Some days I wake up and I'm like, oh, you're here. This is real. Like, I'm really your mother, and I got to make sure I'm growing up.
Yeah.
With
like preteen girls, I say that all the time. I'm like, whoa. So like, this is all right. Cool. We're just in the fucking parenting thing. That's we're in it. Just win it.
You know? Jody, how old are your girls?
12 and almost 10.
Yeah.
And 12 is
12 is hard. Yeah.
Rough year. And 2020 is a rough year. So like, it's just, you know, I get it. I get it. Sometimes, maybe.
Yeah.
Except it's the bullshit's been happening long before the pandemic. So let's be real. It's
I mean,
love. It's been a rough year. I have to say, I will say this time being home, it's been hard having my son here. But then I love it. I'm like, when am I going to get an opportunity to just like love on him like this all the time?
Right.
And then tell him, sit down, stop, be quiet.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. When am I going to have the time?
Love on him again. And
completely scare them with both my love and my, you know, yelling. So
Right. You know,
it's hard because I used to say to my kids, like, you know, someday you'll be out in the world and like, you'll miss me and you realize that you like didn't appreciate me. And the older one, especially now, is like, you don't know that we're ever going to go out in the world again. Maybe we won't. Maybe we're going to have to live with you forever. And I'm like,
oh no, that's not happening. That's not happening.
People can still move in the pandemic.
Yeah. Apartments are definitely available. Yes, they are.
And cheaper, a little cheaper.
Yeah, exactly. So Lauren, we get distracted very easily. Don't mind us. But we want to hear you talk about your video that you created a little bit for people that maybe haven't seen it or don't know about it.
On our Instagram for anyone that wants to, and you better go watch it, all of you people.
What inspired it and what, you know, I mean, it was just such a beautiful video and so incredibly impactful. I would just love to hear more about it.
Yeah. I mean, so honestly, I mean, what impacted is the fact that I have a son, you know, and so every day my life being a Black woman and having a Black boy, mm-hmm. my life is constantly in this question of, his safety, our safety, and like what it means for us to live in this world, in this white world. But after George Floyd's murder and seeing the video, which I didn't want to watch, yeah, but I watched it. And when I heard him call for his mom, it just really brought up the memory for me. Where I am now is I find myself kind of having to separate myself emotionally when I talk about it, because that day I literally cried like I had never cried before. I made my husband and my son leave the house, go to a drive-thru and get me like a coffee. I was like, I need 30 minutes to myself. Mm-hmm. And they left within 5 minutes and I just bawled. Mm. I wailed. That's the word I use. I wailed because mm-hmm. it was, I don't know if I've ever experienced that kind of emotion flowing through me. And all I could think is that his mother, all that a mother wants to do is to protect her child. That is it. Yeah. And she could not get to her son.
Yeah.
To save him. And when I had my son, or when I got pregnant, I tell this story and it sounds so like crazy, but it was my 20-week visit. We were going to figure out if we were having a boy or a girl, and we're in the doctor's office and they say, you know, congratulations, you're having a little boy. And I just started crying.
Oh.
And the doctors were like, you're having a boy and he's healthy. And I was like, and just kept crying. And when we left out the doctor's office, my husband goes, Lauren, you have to pull it together, pull it together. And I said, yeah, I know. And he goes, we're having a healthy baby. And I said, yes, but it's a boy. And I don't know how we're going to protect him. Hmm. And that has been before I've even became a mother. That was something I thought about often. And that's something that it's, you know, I'm not saying anything new. This right. is what my, this is the same things that my mother had to question, the same things my grandmother and my great grandmother. So this has been an ongoing question. And I think we've learned to just to persevere through, and as Black women have to put on this Black woman strength. And I just, the truth is when you see these modern day lynchings,
Jesus. Yeah.
What do you,
I don't know.
I mean, listen, y'all, I'm in Texas right now. And if I took, like, I live in LA, but if I'm in Texas visiting my family, and if I took you guys outside and showed you like the streets, I mean, it's like American flags everywhere, which fine, but American flags to me have a very different meaning these days.
Yes.
And they're not one of like patriotism. We all stand together. We're all together. It feels like signs of aggression.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I haven't seen one Black Lives Matter sign. Oof. My mom lives in the suburbs. So, and I grew up in the suburbs, like all white community, upper middle class. Mm-hmm. So it's just very.
Did you see, not to bring up a horror, but you know, you mentioned these modern day lynchings, which are, I know I am not so unaware as to know that this hasn't been going on. But now it just like it's going on. So it's just, yeah, we're doing this shit. Like it's unapologetically. And there was a video released. This young Black man was going to a beach party or whatever. And he was grabbed from his friends by 5 white men. And they were attempting to break his arms and to hang him from the tree. And it's on video.
Yep.
And he wrote about it. He was able to get out of the incident. His friends fought for him, let him, got him out, all of this kind of stuff. But it's on video. And it's insane to me, the boldness and the absolute impunity with which they didn't seem to give a fuck.
Nope.
That this was on video. And I was so enraged. Sean King had posted it.
Yeah.
And I was so... It was like watching the George Floyd video, where there's a level of heartbreak that is so deep on a level of humanity that I don't want to be fighting. Like, I can't not fight this so fucking vigorously. Like, this is not the world that I want to be in. Like, I can't imagine as a mom feeling that you can't protect your child because at some point people will see him as a threat. And I just can't imagine that, Lauren. And your strength is incredible.
Yeah.
and what you did with that video,
right,
is powerful and incredible and important.
And for people who don't know what the video is, I mean, I encourage everyone to go watch it, but Lauren basically, you know, poses the question to ask yourself when her child became a threat to you. And then you follow kids saying, you know, as kids do little things like, you know, when I learned to walk, when I learned to talk, going up through teen years, how they wear their pants because I had a hoodie on, into, you know, adulthood. And I think one of the most powerful lines is when one of them says, you know, when I started to make white women uncomfortable, which I thought was like, that's a good call out.
Oh my God. So my hair, as you know, sometimes is the bane of my existence.
Yes.
Because, you know, look,
I heard the complaints. Well, as is mine, I have super thin, stick straight, no volume hair, and you have the complete opposite of that.
I have a bird's nest on my head right now. So that's a problem. But, you know, and because of that, like, I'm not going to use the same shampoo as you. And I doubt you're going to use the same shampoo as me.
No.
So I was looking around trying to figure out, you know, is there any sort of unique hair care out there? Like something that's uniquely me and uniquely you. And you know what? There is. It's called Function of Beauty. And I'm completely obsessed with what they do. So obsessed. Okay. Get this. It's formulated specifically for your hair. So no matter what type of hair you have, they create shampoo and conditioner and treatments to fit your unique needs. Yeah. How unique
you are?
Yes. So Function of Beauty has over 54 trillion possible ingredient combinations to make sure your formula is as unique as you. And this is how it works. You take a quiz and you tell them a little bit about your hair. It's super quick. Next, Function of Beauty's team determines the right blend of ingredients, and then they bottle your custom formula to order. Then they deliver your personalized formula right to your door in a cute customized bottle with your favorite color and fragrance. And they even print your name on it. What? Yeah. So when my kids try and steal my shampoo, I can point at it and say, no, whose name does that say?
No.
It says mine.
That is literally mine.
Yeah. It says my name. It's for me. Also, as per usual, most of the things that we endorse, formulas are vegan and cruelty-free. You know how I feel about that. I do not like anything that is tested on animals at all, ever. And they never use sulfites or parabens or any of the other harmful ingredients. It is the very first custom hair care brand, right? It's amazing. It's the internet's top-rated customized hair care brand with over 40,000 real 5-star reviews and counting. I mean, come on.
Okay, so I definitely have to try this because I would love, my children call it spaghetti hair. That's what my hair has become. And so I'm hoping they have a non-spaghetti hair formula. I'm going to go have to take this quiz.
I think you just have to put that into the quiz. No spaghetti hair, please.
Yes.
All right. Well, so if you want to do that, you know, and I don't know what you're waiting for or anybody else, right? What are we waiting for? Go to functionofbeauty.com/say this to take your 4-part hair profile quiz and save 20% off of your first order. Go to, again, functionofbeauty.com/say this for 20% off and to let them know that you heard about it from our show. That's functionofbeauty.com/say this. And I'm going to spell it just in case. And I swear I can spell FUNCTION of beauty, BEAUTY.com/say this.
I'm so glad you spelled that out for me because I needed it. No, I really did. Okay. And I'm going to go take the non-spaghetti hair quiz right now.
You let me know how that goes. Maybe add some sauce.
I just want to tell you, I told this story already on the show, but I do want to tell you because we talked on the phone before the show and I said I would tell you on the show that I've used that, your video, I've sent it to a lot of people that are unclear about Black Lives Matter and definitely had voted for Trump the first time around and were certainly on the fence. And one of the people that I ended up sending it to who was, I sent it to her because she was arguing with her own father. And she sent it to him and said, you need to watch this and you need to look at it as a parent and then come back to me and tell me you're still going to vote for Trump and tell me you don't understand. And he wrote her back after and said, I can't even talk. Like, this was the most intense thing I've ever watched. I get it now. And he's not voting for him. And like that to me, like, I hope you understand the power of that, because I think you hit something for people that, I mean, parents especially, you know, you watch that as a parent and I don't know how you can't just all of a sudden put yourself in that position. What if it was my kid? Like, what if, I mean, we're so, Jody and I are so lucky. And we say that all the time that we try really, really hard to own our privilege. And we're trying really, really hard to learn how to be allies as best we can. And I think we both talked about one of the things that we do the most or try to do the most is read and listen. Like, we just want to listen. We're not, you know, we don't want to speak out of turn. We certainly want people to tell us that we, you know, have. And actually, I didn't say anything about it in the last episode. I meant to post about it, but I forgot. But I did tell you that it happened to Jody. I totally forgot to tell you. We had an episode that aired a few weeks back. Maybe it was even last week. It was last week's episode, the Oh Fuck the Corn episode.
Right.
But I made a comment. I said something about how my hair, you know, if I don't wash my hair and condition or whatever, that it ends up getting dreadlocks in it. And then later in the episode, Jody said dreadlocks too. Like, she was like, yeah. And then, you know, Zoe cut out her dreadlock or whatever, because that was when she cut her hair like a weirdo. And we, you know, I was laughing so hard that at some point I said, I can't breathe. So three things happened in the episode that I remember. I thought to myself, I could tell Emily, we should probably take those out. I didn't know the history behind dreadlocks when I said that. I do now. I won't say it again. And we don't need to talk about it. People should go and look it up. We could have taken it out. But then I thought, you know what? I don't think we should, because this leads us to a discussion of saying, you know what? When you know better, you do better.
Yeah.
And I do worry that people get so worried that they're going to say the wrong thing, that they just get crazy defensive, that like, they're not racist, they're not, but they won't hear it. And if they do say the wrong thing and someone's like, hey, that's actually not cool. Like, you know, like, I've corrected people for saying marijuana, which is actually a pretty racist term. Like, I'm like, hey, I don't use that for a reason. Like, just go look at the history of that word. And people are like, I'm not racist. You're calling me racist. It's like, no, I'm telling you, did something that could upset someone.
Mm-hmm.
I know that that's something that upset someone. I want to know it so I can say fucking sorry.
I do want to go back just a moment though, because when you told Lauren that someone wasn't going to vote for Trump because of what she did, I want everyone to know like the impact that she's making and the change that you're like, you know, it's not just one person.
Right.
I hope you know that, Lauren. It's not just one person. Like, you are, you, your voice, your words, your video, your strength, your humanity has changed people.
And is changing
more people than you will realize. And you are making a difference in this world for you and for your son. And I cannot tell you the admiration I have for that, because the strength that it takes to walk through this world right now as a Black woman and the mother of a Black son, I can't imagine. And it gives me great hope that people like you are putting out content into the world that is making a difference.
Mm-hmm.
And I congratulate you on that. And I wish that we didn't have to. I wish that it wasn't something that I had to congratulate you on to make people aware that this is going on.
Yeah, me too.
You know? But
was it hard to make that video, Lauren? And like, I mean, obviously I know it inspired you, I guess we all do, but was it tough? And did you have, I mean, I kept thinking, cause I think I've watched it like 20 something times now. I kept thinking, you know, you guys, every single person that was involved in that video and their children really put themselves out there. I've shared posts from, you know, Black friends who have said, can you not tag me in that? Can you say that you can say that, you know, someone else wrote it, obviously, but don't tag me because I just don't need the hate right now. I worry for my safety that I'm speaking out. And, you know, you guys all put yourself out there. What made you, how did you approach it, I guess?
You know, when, I'm so just moved emotionally right now.
But when the idea for the video came to me, it was really such a divine moment that I didn't stop and think of like what will happen if millions of people see it, or hundreds, or even if two. I didn't. I just said, this is a message that I have to talk about. It's a question I've thought about for a long time, and that so many mothers, Black mothers, but also just mothers to Black children, because there are women who are not Black mothers, but have Black children. And when I put it, when I got back the first edit from my friend who was helping me to edit, and there was actually like, there were like these Black holes in the middle of the video, because we were still waiting for video footage to come back. And every person in that video, I have to say, I know. They're friends, their children, family, nieces, nephews. So it was so close to my heart already, because these are all children and men that I know. But when the video came back to me and I saw it, even with all the, some of the missing pieces, so I wrote out the script and I just gave each friend a line. I said, can you say this? Can you have your child say this? Will you say this? And when it came back, I just started, I cried, because it hit me in my gut so hard. And I realized what I made, and it wasn't even finished yet, but I realized it was, I can't explain it. It was almost like everything, so much of what I was feeling was in that, right? And people, I've heard people say, oh, your video is beautiful. And I said, isn't it crazy that beauty is made at the expense of so much pain?
Yeah.
Right.
You know? Like, it's been very hard for me to be like, oh, thank you. Because like,
I mean, that's like, to congratulate is not the right word. It's that you had the courage to do this, because it's making a difference. And this is what the world needs. The world needs people with courage and with strength to continue this message on, you know, from every race in America. Like, this is just now, this isn't the time to sit by meekly, you know, this is the time to use your voice and to stand up and to be brave, you know. And we keep seeing that meme and being faced, you know, if you wanted to know what you would do during the civil rights movement, during, you know, abolitionist movements, during like all of this, the Holocaust, the civil, if you want to know what you'd be doing then, do it now.
Yeah.
Because this movement and this time is just as important. And I just read something, I don't remember if it was Newsweek or another newspaper, but talking about how this is the largest movement that has happened ever in the United States.
Yeah.
Ever, with the most community and people involved. And that gives me some hope. Like, I know we seem to be hearing about all the hate and the awful things, but like, let's not forget this movement is huge. Yeah. And it is like, and you know, I keep saying to, you know, people that come on my page should just be assholes. I'm like, look, you can be ignorant and you can do whatever you want, but change is coming whether you're on board or not. So
yeah, this is going away. You know? I posted something on the 4th of July that, you know, whatever, I posted two things, but you know, and it was two different posts about Black Lives Matter and sort of, you know, basically saying like, fuck the 4th of July, because I didn't really feel like that was anything to, you know, celebrate. Although quite honestly, like my family came directly from like into Ellis Island. So I've never had a big attachment to it because I've known that. So like, you know, I just didn't really ever attach, but this year more than ever, I was like, not into it. But someone just posted like to me, commented me and was like, oh, are you still on this already? Enough already. And I was like,
yeah, so I get that too. Are you still on this? I'm like, yes, motherfucker, I am. I'm still on it. Gonna be on it.
Still happening.
I'm like, this is not right. Yes, right. You asshole.
Wait, are you still racist? Happening. Okay, then yes, I'm still on it.
As long as there's racist fucking assholes and this behavior is continuing. Yeah, I'm still on it. I've been on it for a long time. So if you don't like it, please. Yourself or step to the left.
Right. You know what? You know, I think something that I find that's very interesting is when we realize like people who operate and move through life with a racist lens. I have actually a heart of compassion, because one thing is no child comes into this world as a racist.
No, no.
Right.
We're taught that.
Yeah.
You came into this world as a very loving, beautiful child the only thing you come in this world wanting is love.
Yeah. Right.
Love. And you were shown maybe love from your parents, and maybe you learned hate as well. Mm-hmm. And that breaks my heart for those people who have moved through life with such a racist lens.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because they had an opportunity to be something else. And that's what racism does. Racism is so damaging, not just to the person that is oppressed, but the person that does the oppressing. You know, racism strips you. White supremacy strips you of your humanity.
Yeah.
Yes.
It strips you of the ability to see somebody else as human.
Yeah. Well, it's again, based in fear, you know, yeah. And that it comes back to the thing that, like, you can, and for me always, like, you can come from love or you can come from fear. And so much anger right now is because they're afraid of change. They're afraid of the status quo being disrupted. And, you know, when you operate your life in so much fear of that, when it starts happening, your ability to adapt and to participate in the changing of society, which is incredibly important, particularly in a democracy, which we're trying to have, whatever the hell this actually looks like. But if you are unable to participate in the changing of the good for the higher good of more people, then you are stuck in so much fear. Like, what a terrible way to live your life.
Yeah.
That yeah. You're so afraid, and that you're so afraid that sometimes you don't even recognize it as fear because it's just anger. You're just angry. And, you know, I said that I was at the big Black Lives Matter kind of pride celebrated protest, you know, when here in LA, it was like 100,000 people and I was out there. And every time I've been out protesting and marching and stuff, like I look around, and every time I become so moved, because I look around and I see an ocean of amazingly beautiful, wonderful people of so many different colors, gender identifications, like, it's just, it's a sea of humanity celebrating itself. And I look around and it makes me cry, because I go, my God, the thing that so many people are missing is the beauty.
Yeah.
Of this, the beauty of our differences, and celebrating that and making us all equally important and equally as worth fighting for. You know, that's what this is. This is about saying that, like, no one is more important. And if you are not being treated as important as I am, then it is my obligation and my duty to come out and support you and fight for you until you are.
Yeah.
And when I'm out there marching with, you know, hundreds of thousands of people and seeing everyone passing out waters and love and humanity and yelling and marching and fighting for change, I go, this is what it is. This is what's real. And the other bullshit is just fear. And we can't let that
win.
Stop what's happening. We can't let that, you know, fear will not win. Fear, what love wins, like we keep saying, of all kinds. And so when I go out there, it completely re-energizes me to look around and remember how many people of so many different colors and genders and races and ethnicities and people, so many kinds of people are coming together to fight for this. And that is the thing that I have to keep remembering, because otherwise the heartbreak is too great.
Yeah.
And I think we have all had those moments. Like you said, George, that I had the same moment. And I remember my younger daughter came in after I had finished watching it and I was crying, and B came in and she said, "Mama, what's wrong?" And I told her.
Yeah, I told mine
too. That a man was killed by the police and he cried for his mama. Mm-hmm. I said, and I am a mama, B. And that call was to all of us. That was to all mamas. And she cried. And I said, this is the world that we live in right now. And this is why we have to fight for change. You know, I have tried not to shield my children from the injustice and the pain that has caused this movement to happen. And I'm so proud of them. Like, they are sending out petitions through text message for Breonna Taylor. And they came to the marches and they have their signs and they wear their shirts. You know, they're like, I'm raising little warriors, and I couldn't be more proud, you know?
But we get to, I feel like that I agree with you, Jody. And I know that we're both trying to do that so much. And neither of us believe in hiding anything from our kids. I don't see the point in that. I think that just breeds more misunderstanding and more racism, because that lends their ears to somebody else telling them something that I didn't tell them. And I don't want them to do that. I do notice more and more that, you know, that falls under privilege though also. Is that that's a choice that we get to make.
Exactly.
To raise our kids this way. And that, you know, Lauren, you don't have that choice. Like, you knew it when you found out that you were having a boy. And I'm sure that, I mean, I know that, you know, moms, black moms with black girls also fight an entirely different struggle.
Oh, gosh, yeah.
The same struggle at one time. I mean, there's, you know, I know there's, it's two sides of a really, or two sides of a pretty, you know, unfair, shitty coin. I think that your video is tapped into exactly though what Jody was talking about, which is the humanity. Like that's why it's so, I think it's so powerful, because there are things that I've noticed that really racist people can find an argument in anything. They don't seem to be able to find an argument with just wanting your child to be safe. They'll argue that, you know, oh, but what about this? And, you know, if one more fucking idiot racist gives me like stats, oh, and that are inaccurate for that matter of, you know, like, oh, but, you know, black people kill more black people than, it's like.
I just hit him. I'm like, here's the logical fallacy and the, you know, thing that you're trying to do right now. And that's really cute, but let's stay on topic. Anyway, enough of you, go, you know what I mean? Like, it's.
Even if you trace though, even, you know, when we talk about like black on black crime or Latinx crime, right. If you trace it back, that all came from systemic racism.
Exactly.
Drugs were put into our community.
Right. And the war, I was like, the bullshit war on drugs, which has been fucking useless and targeted black and persons of color communities. That's bullshit.
Yeah.
Like overly militarized police. Mm-hmm. I mean, let's go back to the 50s and redlining. There's a reason that, you know, I just watched this whole thing that was posted on Now This talking about, you know, there's a reason for such the wealth disparity, because
it was on purpose.
In the 50s and 60s, black people you weren't allowed to buy these homes that were reasonably priced that even black middle class families could afford. They couldn't buy them. Therefore,
they wouldn't give you a loan.
You wouldn't give you a loan, and you had to sign the deeds actually had in them to the developers, there we go, that actually created the houses had to sign something saying when the houses were finished, they would not sell them to a black family. And in many of the deeds, it said, I will not resell to a black family. And so there is a reason that white people who weren't, you know, maybe making tons of money, but they were able to invest in a small house. And then when they paid that off, their children got to have that house after they passed away, or they were able to use it to invest money. And there's a reason that all of that happened for white people and not for black people. And so we wonder why and the education and all that, like as so many white people can sit around and be like, well, why are they in such poverty? Like, because of the whole thing, you're not looking. And I think it's also, people have a very hard time, like Lauren said, looking at systemic racism. People can look at overt racism of calling someone, you know, an offensive name, or, you know, not doing something because of the color of their skin. But I think it's really hard for people to look at this global idea of systemic racism. And when we talk about systemic, it is subversive, and it is, we are steeped in it like American tea bags of just dipped in this racism that we don't even know we're surrounded by.
Yeah.
In all of our systems, our banking, our education, our laws, where we live, our wealth, all of that is included in systemic racism. And trying to explain that to people who have a very myopic view of what racism should look like and why they're not racist it's really hard, because this is a big idea with lots of facets to it.
Oh, being a parent / teacher these days it's complicated, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, it is not an easy task. So I have been looking for different products and different things to help with that journey. Now, this one, my kids are a little bit old for, but oh my gosh, I wish they had Homer.
What's Homer?
Well, Homer is this app that I have been checking out and I've been recommending to a lot of my friends with younger kids. It is a proven learn to read program. And it's really cool because it's powered by your kids' passions. So the membership includes two apps, Homer Stories and Homer Reading and all the stuff, four customizable profiles. It's great. It's designed for
amazing.
Yeah. It's designed for kids ages 2 through 8. So, you know, like I said, mine are a little old for it, but I've been checking it out anyway. Zoe would have loved to have been able to read with Thomas the Train. I mean, there's Thomas the Train, there's Where the Wild Things Are.
What?
Angelina Ballerina.
Oh my God.
And you can use all of those things to help teach your kid to read.
That is amazing.
Yeah, it's got thousands of kid-tested lessons, so you know it's fun and you know they're going to love them. It's on ABCs, phonics, sight words, and so many things that you can enjoy right in your living room and are all designed by learning experts. And you can do it just 15 minutes a day.
So wow.
They can have some screen time. You can be like, yeah, sneak in a little education there for you. 15 minutes a day of Homer reading was shown to increase early reading scores by 74%. 74% is a bit, that's definitely a marked difference.
That is really awesome.
Another great thing that I love about it, and I've been noticing on the app as I've been just kind of playing with it, is that it's ad-free.
Oh.
Safe and easy for kids to use instead of scrolling through YouTube or watching TV. Homer will keep your kid engaged with educational content and activities, allowing parents to work from home or get a break and take care of other things like laundry or maybe a much desired, actually hot cup of coffee.
What's that?
Which I know these days I pour a lot of coffee for myself and then leave it cold on the counter because I get busy trying to help the kids do stuff.
Yep.
You know, it's personalized. It's fueled by kids' interest. It grows with them as they build their skills. So they never feel like they're doing the same thing over and over again. It really helps to deepen their level of learning, which is something that I've always been really passionate about with my kids, which, you know, for better or worse, they may or may not listen, but I am so dedicated to learning. And, you know, this is just such a great way to help, you know, guide by your kids' age, their interests, their reading level. Homer's online lessons translate to offline skills and knowledge.
I feel like I maybe need Homer for my own self. Can I do it? I want to read Elmo.
I feel like it might not be a bad idea. So for our listeners, go to visit learnwithhomer.com/say this to start a free 60-day trial. That's learnwithhomer, H-O-M-E-R, .com/say this, and you can start a free 60-day trial and your kids can start doing better in learning and reading, and you can start doing better in getting a hot cup of coffee.
And maybe I'm going to read some too.
Lauren, do you try to talk to your son about that stuff now? I mean, all of this, all of it, and Black Lives Matter, everything. I mean, as we're talking about some really big ideas, how do you impart that onto your son?
Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, he's 3.5. So right now I spend my days and my time making sure that he is so full of love. Mm-hmm. Because there's enough out there that I know will try to break him down. Mm-hmm. That right now I'm just, my focus is making sure he knows who he is. So affirming him with words, you are smart. Mm-hmm. You have self-control. You are loving. You're kind. You're gentle. You're strong too. You know, like I'm making sure to use those kind of words and affirming him consistently right now, because I already know what the outside world does, right? I already know how the things that they'll say to him. Mm-hmm. If the change doesn't happen soon, and it didn't happen overnight, so it's not going to change overnight,
right?
You know, two things I was thinking of when you were talking. One, I'm here working on, I came here to see my family, but I'm also working on a documentary. And I'm doing it, it's very guerrilla style. It's me and my husband doing it on our own, and we're doing it all from iPhones.
Amazing. I love that.
Yeah. But it's all about our experience and growing up, or my experience in growing up in white America. Mm-hmm. And a friend of mine said, well, you don't even have to say white America. You just have to say America. And I was like, well, that's true. But I want to say, like, it's the fact of being in white America, because my experience has been nothing but white America. And then I went to college, where I was at HBCU, whole nother story. But, you know, as you ask me, like, well, how am I raising my, how, what am I telling my son? My friend's mother reminded me yesterday. She said, you know, I remember one day I had to go pick my son up. He was in first grade. And she said, he called me from school and said, Mom, the teacher pinched me.
What?
I was like, what? And she said, yeah, and this was my friend. He's a grown man now. But so she rushed up to the school. This is when we were in elementary school. And the teacher had pinched him so hard, bruised him, because he had, I don't know what he did. I make probably do anything.
Who cares?
Exactly. Right. Where we grew up, we were the only Black kids in our class. So like, and I say class, I mean all of first grade, right, or all of second grade. And there would be like six different classes in the fifth grade or in the second grade, and you know, and the teacher put her hands on him. And that, for me, when she told me the story last night, I thought to myself, this is, it's not even always so big of like losing their lives. That's, we know that's there.
Right.
But just the fact of that, a little, my friend's little Black boy, when he was in first grade, a teacher thought that she could put her hands on him to reprimand him and would have never thought about doing that to any of the white kids.
Yeah.
Never.
Right. Yep.
Wow. And I'm sure the fact of when Mom came to the school, part of what she had to think about was, don't look like
angry, but the angry,
oh, 100%.
Because you're not allowed to be that, because that's the expectation and the, you know, pigeonhole that we've put Black women into is like, oh, the, you know, angry Black lady.
Right.
When you come to the school to defend your fucking first grader, like, I could come in there and be like, are you kidding? Like, and you lose it, mm-hmm, and not be seen as a stereotype. And, you know, and that people don't consider that. People don't consider that moms and dads can't even go in and advocate for their children.
Oh,
white families could, because they're seen as aggressive.
Wait, Lauren, you're shaking your head vigorously. Like, what, that you can't, you feel like you absolutely can't advocate for your child in school. Is that where you're
at? Well, when what Jody said, though, when she was like, you know, she could go into the class, she could go into the school and be like, did she put her hands on my child? And she could go off.
Right.
And what the school's response would be like, okay, we've got to make sure that her, let's fire that teacher. Let's get a new teacher in here. Let's have somebody, right, let's a student aide in there that's like watching to make sure. And for me, it would be a very different story, or for any other Black mom. And it would be like, okay, well, obviously your son did something. Let's figure out what he did. Let's think about his behavior. Mm-hmm. And he might not have done anything.
Well, that's what happens as kids get older and older, right? That's the thing. When cops pull over, you know, a Black kid driving, or, you know, Trayvon Martin's, why there, he must've been doing something. What was he mm-hmm. doing? Why did he run? Right. You know,
because he's doing wrong. Why did he,
yeah. Cause they're, right. Because you are, you know,
I just watched, The Hate You Give.
Yeah.
Actually, Zoe, I said, hey, let's watch a movie tonight. We're going to watch something. And she goes, hey, Mom, there's a movie I want you to watch. I've watched it a couple times. I think you'd really be interested in it. And I was like, okay. And we watched it. And I mean, I must have cried at least five times in the first half of it. And one of the most heartbreaking scenes I sat there and I watched her face, and she was upset and crying too, was when they're sitting around the table and the dad is having to tell them, here's what you do when you get pulled over. You don't move your hands. You keep your hands on the dad, you know, all of this kind of stuff. And he is 8, 9.
Yeah.
And my heart broke, because again, I know that these are the conversations that Black parents have to have, and parents of Black children, like you said, have to have with them. And I was like, what the fuck?
But I don't think most,
like, for me, it's like, what are we doing
right
to these children? Where, I mean, the trauma of racism begins at such an early age, because you have to tell these kids.
It doesn't begin at an early age. We're born with the trauma.
But that's what I mean. The recognition of it is,
I want to ask you a question.
From the moment they're born, they know this is how I'm treated, and mm-hmm. that, and these are conversations I have to have.
Yeah.
And that was just, it's like I said, knowing it and seeing it depicted in real life, the anger and the hurt and the pain and the just, you know, I can't. And again, I have the privilege to sit and observe it.
Right.
And, you know, I can't imagine.
Lauren, can I ask a question?
Yeah.
We can always cut it out if it's a bad question. Well, I feel like people don't ask enough, I guess, questions about, like, I'm going to struggle asking it. I guess I want to ask you, like, when you were growing up, do you remember the first time that either your parents had to have a conversation with you about race or being treated differently because you were Black, or did you just grow up knowing that you were different? And because I think that Jody has a good point about, you know, all the conversations that obviously you have to have with your kids that we don't have to have with our kids. I don't actually think that most white, I'm just going to say moms in this sense, but I suspect dads too, but because we have on a mom, I'm saying moms. I don't actually think that most white moms ever think about those conversations. And I feel like your voice is very important, if you don't mind. And I don't want to put it on you and be like, please educate us. It's more of a, can you share your experience? Because I'm very frustrated with people tagging like their Black friends and being like, tell them, you know, that's not fair.
Well, I mean, absolutely. I mean, my parents definitely told us. So let me give you a little background. I told you I grew up in like a very white suburb, but where I grew up is called Plano, Texas. Mm-hmm. And I always say it's plain and there's like no Black people allowed. But there are more Black people now. But growing up here, first grade, second grade, I was always the only Black kid. I have an older brother. He was always the only Black kid. And so my parents, from when we were very young, like when we first moved here, so that was my first grade year and second grade year, I remember my parents were like, they would never let us go out the house with anything out of place. So my brother and I were always dressed very nicely going to school. We didn't go to school with wrinkles in our clothes. My parents they took a lot of pride in the way that we walked out, because they knew then that they couldn't send their kids to school with a spaghetti stain because they would be looked at as sending their kids out there looking messy.
Oh.
You know, I mean, my son's 3 and a half and he gets like food on his shirt. And I'm like, oh, we got to change. Because if I send him out to go on a play date or go to an event with other kids from school, the conversation could very well be, oh gosh, she has her big child out here looking like not well kept.
Hmm.
Something must be wrong at home.
Something might be wrong at home. So that was like, those were the first little things that I remember. Now, looking back as an adult, I don't know that I understood that as a kid, but I remember as a kid when my parents told us, you know, and this was in elementary school, you can't go, you have to listen in class. You can't horse around, you know, you can't play, you can't be the class clown like the other kids, because you will not be treated the same. You are Black and they are not.
Wow.
And I remember it being that clear. And so it was my fourth grade year, my third grade year, my brother's fourth grade year. We got a new teacher at the school. Her name was Mrs. Mole. I'll always know her. She was a Black teacher. And my mom made sure that my brother was in her class. That was the first year that my brother was challenged more in his work. And she was like, he's too smart. He's like grades ahead. He actually should have been skipped ahead, because he was never being challenged. So they kept labeling my brother as like a class clown, but he wasn't being challenged.
He was bored.
He was bored.
Mm-hmm.
And in that same year, we got a new principal at my elementary school. Her name was Mrs. Sanders. She was a Black principal.
Wow.
And my mom and my whole life in that elementary school changed, because there were two people who were always looking out for me, the principal and then that fourth grade teacher.
Wow.
And that for me was one of the ways that like my parents always showed how they were showing up for us. And that was, you know, if there was a Black teacher, we were in the Black class, you know, when the principal came, you know, it was just like always, they tried to find a family wherever we went, especially in our educational system. And after elementary school, unfortunately, I don't know that I ever had another Black. I never had another Black principal, and I might have had like one other Black teacher.
Wow.
But like the cop conversation and being pulled over, those were all very real things, you know. And the racism, I mean, I had my first big racist experience in middle school in sixth grade.
What? By the way, you just made me realize that I never in middle school, elementary school, high school, I don't believe I ever had a Black teacher. I grew up in a very white place.
And I have that realization too. I don't know. My kids have, but I don't know that I never did either. Again, growing up in Orange County, very different experience. Wow.
Mm-hmm. What? And it never even occurred to me until just now. Also, how messed up is that? Grad school I did, but not, and I think maybe even college, but geez. And what, so if you don't, do you mind sharing what your first thing was?
Yeah, it was my sixth grade year. When I tell the story, I say it was my first day, but I don't know if it was, I don't really think it was my first day. It was just the first experience that I remember of middle school. And I was going to the bathroom and this boy came up to me and he cornered me into a corner and he told me he wanted to sacrifice my virgin body. And it was very, it scared the heck out of me, number one. Sure. And it's like, what, I mean, how do you even know I'm a virgin? Who told my business? Right.
Yeah. And what creepy shit are you watching?
Right. A fucking volcano? What do you, what?
Who told my business? But I remember after school that day, I told my brother, I said, you know, this boy told me he wanted to sacrifice my body, my virgin body. And he said, who? And we're standing there in the carpool line. And I see the boy get into his dad's car. It was a big truck. And my brother said, that's him. And my brother goes, that boy in that pickup truck with the Confederate flag on the back.
Oh my God.
And I said, yeah, but I didn't know what the Confederate flag meant. But my seventh grade brother did.
Whoa.
And I think about that often because the next day my brother cornered him and pinned him up against the wall. And I think he maybe gave him one good hit to the chest. He didn't hurt the guy. My brother got expelled from school. He got suspended.
What?
He got expelled first. The guy, nothing happened to the guy. My dad came up to the school and the dean at the time, she was very racist. And at that point in middle school, there was probably about like 15 black kids. Cause my middle school was very big. We had like 700, 800 kids in each grade. It was very big.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, we all knew, every black kid knew that they were, she was very, very racist. And I'm going to say her name. Her name was Mrs. Resnick.
Mm-hmm.
And Mrs. Resnick.
Yeah, absolutely.
And anyway, that kid didn't get nothing happened to him. My dad, who was as an attorney, came up to the school and was like, basically, you either like bring my son back or there's going to be some serious issues. I think my brother ended up getting in school suspension, but for like a week.
Wow.
And but the point is like my brother was defending me.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, we had to learn that we were black by knowing that the people who are supposed to be at your school protecting you are not there to protect you.
Yeah.
You know, we had to understand, we had to learn racism in that way. I had to learn racism in that way. That's when my parents taught me about like the Confederate flag. And then after that, I was like, oh man, I see these flags all the time.
Yep.
I didn't know. I see them all the time. Literally. I think I had friends whose parents had them.
Yeah. I mean, I lived in Orange County. I saw it. There was a dude this weekend apparently driving through San Diego with a Nazi flag on the back of his Jeep.
Oh, yay.
The thing that I said about that was, one asshole doing that is scary enough. But what's more terrifying to me is that he felt safe enough in this country, in that city, to display that and not think that someone was just going to walk up and beat the fuck out of him. You know what I mean? That to me spoke of, again, that privilege to be like, I can do what I want. Fuck you. You know, and I was just like, wow. So this is the country we got. All right.
I put up a post on last week, and it said something to the effect of like, you know, when I hear people say, it was not me, I didn't write it, I saw it. It was like when I hear people talking about, you know, Trump, it's like listening to people how they used to talk about Hitler, you know, like, oh, he was really good for the economy and, you know, all right, he did some bad stuff, but like he did all these great things too. And it was like, you know, that's how you fucking sound. And so I posted that. And right away, you know, I got all the haters and a lot of people were like, you can't compare Trump to Hitler. I'm like, first of all, I'm actually not, that's not comparing him to Hitler. That's comparing people that support him to people that supported Hitler and were making up excuses for why he could do this. But all of a sudden, what started happening was all the anti-Semitic people were coming out on my wall and I started getting attacked for being Jewish. And then I got a lot of like, you know, people sticking up for Hitler. And then I had Jews come at me being like, I can't believe you're posting that. You know, you don't know about the Holocaust. I had to be like, fuck you. I'm Jewish. I lost family in the Holocaust. Yes, I do. Read it again. Sure. But I also in that minute, like when it was all sort of happening at once and I'm like battling this shit and I'm blocking people and I got scared. And I had a minute where I was like, oh, well, now I'm fucking scared because there are pictures of my kids and I'm so openly, you know, Jewish and I'd make Jew jokes and stuff, you know, and I've owned the fact that I still have white privilege because even though I'm Jewish, I don't have to say it. And I just had that minute of like, okay, but see, I still can just not say it. I still could just shut this down. I could take this off. I can probably protect myself. But this is my little teeny window into how Black people feel all the fucking time in this climate specifically, but probably always before that. And I didn't know. I got called a kike once when I was around the same time, you know, you learned about racism. I learned about anti-Semitism. And, you know, yeah, it was shitty. But again, I can pass for all kinds of things. And that is a fucking privilege. And that's, you know, I do want to ask you really fast, Lauren, as Jody was talking about, you know, feeling hope in watching Black Lives Movement and being at marches. And she and I were at one together and I went to another and, you know, and I felt that same thing. And during this time, I know, like with everyone acting like fucking idiots with COVID, there's this weird part of me that sort of finds hope in the fact that our government and different things are hopefully fucking shifting. But is that a privilege too? Like, how do you feel when you watch all of these things? How does it make you feel? Does it feel like things are really changing? And what, as allies, can you tell us anything else that we can be doing that maybe we're not doing and anyone who's listening is not doing and wants to do?
That's a good question. Number one, let me say, I do have hope. Okay. And my hope isn't in people. My hope really is in my faith. Mm-hmm. That's really it. What I asked on the fourth, I posted something saying, what does freedom look like to you?
Mm-hmm. I saw your post.
And what does equality look like to you? And then I said, what if this whole entire history of this United States was built on lies? And so when I wrote that, it was like, it sounds very broad, but part of it is like this one of self-examination. So what if you were like lied to? So even people who have walked with racism inside of them, because I don't, it's like, yes, they're racist, but like you can change.
Yeah.
That does not have to be your label.
But right. I mean, look, you know, let's all remember the fucking American History X movie. Like dude comes out as, you know, it can happen.
Yes. You have to. And like, you can change. And so that's actually not how you were created. You weren't created to have a hateful heart like that.
Yeah.
So I have hope in that. Mm-hmm. Hope that people can change. And I think if we can examine and say like, nobody wants to be lied to. So like, what if we really looked at the world that we're living in like that, that really is like rooted in a lot of lies. And now we all have to begin to do self-examination and see like, well, really, what is the truth? Like really, really, really went back and like, saw all the history we were never taught.
Right. And the opposing view to that, like our history is from white men. Like, there were other people, like things were happening, you know, look at.
I didn't know about June 19th until this, not this year, like 3 years ago, I want to say. I had no idea what Juneteenth was. I was not taught to me in school.
I grew up in Texas. It was not in my history books.
I don't understand.
Juneteenth happened in Galveston, Texas. I took Texas history all the way from middle school through high school. Not once was it ever in one of my history books. Ever. Ever. I learned about Juneteenth because my parents told me, and my parents learned when they came down to the South, because they're from, you know, New York and Philly. So they didn't know about Juneteenth. They didn't. And it wasn't until they came to the South that they learned about it. But you know, I think my greatest hope, like I said, I really put in faith and in the ability that people can change. Mm-hmm. And that this is a time where I believe that we're being called to be our highest, most powerful, loving, caring selves. And I think we're seeing such disparity, not just here in the United States, but worldwide, because if a shift doesn't happen, all this can crumble.
Yep. Yep.
All of this can crumble, and it will if a shift doesn't happen.
Yeah.
I think, you know, if I can walk forward with something, I would say don't stop. Mm. Everybody, because we're home, people are excited about the movement. People who have never had a voice or explored their voice in it or explored their own race, you know, their own thoughts of white supremacy or how they uphold white supremacy and how they benefit from it. They're wanting to do some of that work. They're wanting to explore their own biases. But don't stop.
No.
Yeah. And don't do it because people are asking you to. Do it because you want to. Do it because your life depends on it.
Yeah.
Not just my life, but your life.
And our children's lives.
Like our kids' lives depend on it. And just, you know, going back to what you said, there's love and there's fear. And guess what? If you go look at any study, fear is proven to cut life short.
Yeah.
So even if you want a longer life, just begin to love Black people. A little longer, right? If you want to live longer, love Black people.
Yes. Right. Why not?
And then begin to love all people of color. Yeah. And you're going to have a lot longer life.
And just a much happier, like I said, it's such a, and you know, there's, Martin Luther King has a great quote about it. It's so heavy to hold on to hate.
Yeah.
So heavy. It is a boulder and a rock that you will slug with you the rest of your life. It is so much easier and lighter to just love. And to, you know, I've been recommending the bias adjuster that I keep tagging her in a lot of stuff.
Yeah, I do too.
I'm like, great. I'm sure you're not. But guess what?
Inventory.
We all have biases. We all have unconscious things, myself included. It just by nature of where we grew up, what we grew up around, who our parents are, what our education, all of that kind of stuff. And we have to look at it, you know, and this is... you know, it's funny because people on my page are always like, oh, you're just jumping on the bandwagon. I'm like, no, I just finally got loud about it because I just couldn't. I've always been that person and I've posted about it some, but now it's like, you know what? All bets are off. Like, I have to be publicly loud about the person that I've always been on the side, you know? And I think we're all finding that right now is just, this is not a time to sit idly by and wring our hands and wish something would be different. This is the time we all jump in and we put in some fucking work.
I mean, this is not a moment. This is a movement.
Yeah.
Yep.
Let's not let this be something that trends.
Right.
No, this is, I want to be very clear. We have seen Black men murdered, maybe not in the same way as George Floyd, but we've seen this for hundreds of years.
Uh-huh.
You know, now we have, you know, we have the media that allows us to see things differently with technology, but this cannot be something that trends. It can't be something that's been on Twitter and on Instagram for the last, you know, month, 2 months. And then what happened, you know, when there's a cure to COVID, it's like pandemic's over.
Right. No. And I've gotten that too. Like, cause I, you know, and I get that post a lot. People are like, are you still on it? You know, we were talking about, and I'm like, yeah, cause this is just starting. Like, this is not, you know, and I've also gotten the message though from a lot of people, like, thank you for continuing to talk about it, because so many people did Blackout Tuesday and a couple posts and then they're like, all right, I'm done.
Yeah, I'm done.
This is not done.
About it a lot about, you know, if, and not to compare the two things, I know they're not the same at all, but I do think about, you know, Nazi Germany and how people didn't come to help the Jews for so long. And the fact that, you know, I feel that so deeply when I see what's been happening here, like that it's my duty to start talking as loud as I possibly can, because I don't want that to happen to anybody else, to continue to happen to people. But also I'm very clear, and I can't remember the exact quote, but you know, it's like when the first they came for, you know, the socialists, I think that's what,
right,
you know,
right. It's from his book. Yeah.
Right. And eventually they came from the Jews. No one said anything kind of thing. And it's like, you know, and then there was nobody left. And it's like, this isn't something, you know, this is something that we all have to fight, to your point, Lauren, of like, this is what we're doing for everyone. So we all survive. It's like, you think, you know, anyone out there that thinks that like they're immune to people coming for them, unless I guess they're white men, although now we're coming for you like, fuck this. But, you know, you're not immune to it. And you'd hope that people would use their voice to help you, whether you're, you know, women, gay, trans, and you know, Jews, whatever, Islamic, whoever I'm forgetting, I'm sorry. You know, it's that where I do feel like it's civic duty. I said duty. All right, I'm sorry. I had to do it because we're at the end of the show. I know we are, so I had to be wildly immature. And speaking of duty, because we haven't had, I never thought I'd say this, and this can be about anything. Lauren, since you become a mom and you do have a 3.5-year-old, is there something like ridiculous, fascinating, anything that you've had to say to your son that you're like, I can't believe I just had to say that to an actual human being? We have a lot of them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Our favorite one is usually don't stick the crayon in the cat's butt because it doesn't
look like it.
That's always a good one. No, don't lick the wallpaper.
Right. Get your mouth off the toilet. That's always fun.
You know, I think that I had an interesting like moment with my son. One time I came out the shower.
Yeah.
And my son goes, oh my, no, mommy. Oh no. And I was like, what's wrong? What's wrong? He said, yours is broken. And I was like,
right.
He was looking for my penis. And he said, my mommy doesn't have one. He's broken. It's
broken.
It was like one of the like most amazing, like funny moments.
Right.
Oh my God.
Never have to think. You're like, oh, that's right. You're born into the world not realizing everyone doesn't have the same parts as you. That's right.
Right.
And I have parents where you're like, oh my God, I didn't know this shit either.
Right. No, and it was also a moment where I was like, oh, it's time to start locking the door when I shower.
Right.
I was like, oh, no more company. I think I need private space.
You're looking, we're good. Yeah.
Can a penis actually break, by the way? Now it's what I want to know.
Yes, they can.
They can break? They can
break? They can?
You can, yes, an erect one can actually break because you can break the blood vessels inside of it and snap them. And it's actually incredibly painful. And
you've done it to someone, have you?
No, thank God. But I do know people that it has happened to. And there's like testicular, which is a whole other thing. But no, you actually can, you know.
Break a penis.
Like a Slim Jim, sort of. Just, you know, it's, yeah.
I think of it like a glow stick.
Right. And then you shake it and it lights up. No, it's.
There we are.
Right. No, but it can, you can, I mean, you know, there's blood vessels and veins and all that kind of stuff in there and you can.
God, I'm really disappointed that I didn't know this before. I feel like there's like at least several guys I would have like broken their penis had I given the chance. Like, honestly.
I mean, it's usually not, I don't think it's something that you can like do on it. Like it's a, like, it's usually.
It's not like a karate move. Like, from no.
Right. From sex accidents where it's like, there was an accident during sex of like someone rolled and it stayed in and it's a thing. So,
oh my God.
I'm glad that we ended the show at least with something completely talked about and inappropriate because we were on such good behavior. I was a little worried that our listeners were going to be like, "Where's the inappropriate penis comments?" And
as I said, duty.
They are.
They came in.
Yeah, because I said duty. I'm sorry. It's me. I have a 12-year-old.
No, it's great. It's great because you know we're good. Serious, like an hour, and then we have to break. So.
Do you tell your child, like when they were kids, did you tell them it's time to go poo poo? Or did you say it's like, I got to go duty or doo doo?
Celia?
No, I'd say if you have to go poop, but for some reason, the word duty makes me laugh all the time. See, like, it's the same.
Y'all never heard dookie?
Oh, of course.
Oh, yeah.
Both my kids say dookie all the time, which I was very clear. Like I was like, how come I didn't like grow up really knowing that word? And then I was like, where did you guys learn that? And they were like, Maya, our babysitter who's black. And I was like, and I saw Maya, I was like, is that black?
Yeah, for
like,
sure.
I don't know. It was just, she's like, we just always said dookie. So both my kids will say dookie, but they say a lot of things in general that they shouldn't. So, you know, it doesn't really matter.
Right.
Yes.
Dookie duty.
Well, I kind of want this episode to be called Racist Dookies now, but is that wrong?
Right? Racist Dookie Heads. Duty. No, duty. Racist Duty Heads. Yeah.
Racist Duty Heads.
Yeah. Because we're mature.
Yes, we are.
But Lauren, I can't tell you thank you enough for coming on the show to share your experience and your creativity and your video and what you're doing in the world right now. It's so important.
Wait to see your documentary.
I'm super excited about it. So can you let people know where to find you, follow you, find your video, stuff like that?
Yeah. So you can find me on Instagram. I'm on Facebook. I don't know how long I'll be on there anymore. I like don't go on and I just, we didn't even talk about that. We don't
a lot.
That's, yeah. So you can find me on Instagram at Lauren Whitney. It's Lauren with a Y, L-A-U-R-Y-N, Whitney, W-H-I-T-N-E-Y. And then you can find my video either on YouTube or Instagram, but also authenticvoicesmedia.com.
Perfect. Do you have anything else that you'd like to impart to us or anyone who's listening to us? We may have lost a bunch after Dookie. I don't know.
You know, I'm going to leave with the same question that I've been asking people. And I think it is very loaded, but I dare you to ask yourself if you're willing to do the work. And the question is, how do you uphold white supremacy and how do you benefit from it?
Mm-hmm.
And then how do you uphold anti-Black racism? And are you willing to trade in your benefits for justice?
Mm-hmm.
And I think those are questions that are hard, but I want to say, remember that racism affects us all, not just the oppressed, but also the oppressor. And I don't know why, but today I just feel it so strong on my heart to say that if anyone's listening and they're walking with some type of fear in their heart that comes out through racism, you're really loved.
Mm.
You don't have to walk through this world with that kind of weight on you. And you weren't made or brought into this world to operate in that kind of fear. And I love how you name that, Jody, that hatred is fear. You don't have to walk through life like that. And I just feel that really on my heart to say that. And I do believe that this world can be a better and brighter place, but it takes us all doing the work and asking ourselves the really hard questions. And when you ask yourself the questions, you've got to stick to the work. Don't stop.
Yeah, absolutely.
I love what you guys are doing. And I've had so much fun on here with you guys. And to all those people that, you know, want to say some crazy stuff on y'all's pages. I think often, you know what? Often when we fight back with words like that or with hatred or unkindness and we say things, those people most likely are seeing something that they want.
Right.
They want to have the freedom that you have.
Mm-hmm.
They want a free heart. They want to self-examine. They want to get rid of all the things that are holding them down and back, but they don't know how to do it.
Yeah, that's such a good point.
And they don't have to be alone. Maybe keep showing up here. Maybe keep checking up on y'all's page.
Right.
But that's often it. It's often when we see a reflection of ourselves that we're like, you know.
Oh, that makes us uncomfortable.
It makes us uncomfortable. But uncomfort, that's where change happens.
Yeah. Oh, I've been saying that forever. I keep saying, you know, the world doesn't change. We don't change when we're nice and cozy and happy. We change when we're uncomfortable. And I hope this is making people uncomfortable enough that real change happens, you know. But I just, again, thank you so much, Lauren. I implore everybody to please, 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 like you said, keep doing the work. Keep educating yourself. Go watch this video. Ask yourself the hard questions. We're willing. Just be willing, you know, a little tiny, like they say in 12-step programs, a little tiny mustard seed of willingness. Just be willing to do some work and to look at some things and question the world that you've grown up in, because it might not be true.
Yeah.
But thank you so much, Lauren. And to all of our listeners, if you want to find us on Instagram for the show, it is at Never Thought I'd Say This. Also on Facebook at Never Thought I'd Say This. And then, of course, you can follow us individually at Jody Sweeten, at The Celia Behar. And remember, guys, keep killing the parenting game.
And not your kids.
Never Thought I'd Say This is a co-production by Audioboom and Main Event Media.